You're listening to Weird and Dead, the paleontology podcast that tells evolution's most embarrassing and bizarre stories. I'm Amy Atwater.
And I'm Megan Wetherell, and we're two living scientists who are weirdly excited about dead things.
On this week's episode, we're talking snoots and wattles and funny floppy face flesh, like trunks.
And of course, all the scientific evidence that we could muster to tell you how your dinosaurs looked even stupider than you thought.
Like always, our podcast talks about some disgusting stuff, so please read through the content warnings before continuing. Thank you. Wow, I'm so excited for today's topic. I've wanted to hear your perspective on some of these things, and I probably have, but we were probably drinking, so I don't remember, and I'm excited to hear about trunks.
Yeah, so today's episode is a lot about trunks and then about other fleshy bits. And by trunks, I don't mean like the torso of your body. We're talking about elongated elephant trunks.
What about?
Or the proboscis.
What about my tree trunk?
No, I don't care about your tree trunk. It's not gushy enough. We are talking about very meaty, weird, flappy things, which normally as a paleontologist, I'm super not into. But because trunks have such a very strong correlation between weird fleshy bits and bony accommodations for those fleshy bits, you can actually tell pretty clearly in the fossil record when an animal had a trunk, unless you just want to pretend that it didn't. So with mammals have evolved trunks many, many times. There's lots and lots of different groups of mammals that have trunks. Maybe we'll get into kind of why it's so easy for them to evolve trunks and why they seem to be so obsessed with doing so. But when you go and you look at things like birds and reptiles, it's a lot less common, not absent, but a lot less common for them to have trunks, especially ones that are like muscular. So like one of the few examples of like a trunk or like a proboscis or some sort of weird smoochy nose would be soft-shelled turtles often will have elongated faces and elongated snouts that they use kind of as snorkels. So like there are some examples, but not a ton. But the thing is, when you're looking at a typical trunk, so something like an elephant or a tapir or some of the weird antelopes that we're going to talk about today, in mammals, it's a very like 1-to-1 ratio. They all have what's called nasal retraction. So the bone of their nose basically moves backwards and they get kind of this big, empty, sloping bit. Because, of course, if you're going to strap a gigantic trunk on your face, you want to also be able to see. So you need to make some space for all of that muscle because you can't just plop it on top of the bone. So they have kind of like this absence of bone to accommodate all of that fleshy bit. So it's a pretty consistent thing where you get often the nasal opening appears bigger as well because there's no nose bones in front of it. They don't have like that muzzle. So the muzzle pulls back. The nose often goes almost with like elephants in particular. That's why some people think that the Cyclops myth started from elephant skulls because elephants basically look like they have one giant eye.
Terrifying.
And it turns out that that is their nose. Yeah.
And that's like worse.
It's so gross, actually,
that's
really.
That's creepier.
Yeah, isn't it?
I think I'd take one eye over a trunk coming off of your face that you can move with your own control. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, when you think too hard about it, trunks are really disturbing.
Tubes
but
of flesh.
There's a group of dinosaurs that have very similar characteristics.
Oh, really?
To mammals that have trunks. And I should say, the bony characteristics for a trunk are also very similar in animals that are aquatic, especially like whales and dolphins.
Yeah.
They have also moved their nostrils back and up. And that is for a different purpose. They don't have trunks. They've moved it up so they can have the blowhole. But when people first started like noting the fact that sauropod dinosaurs, especially things like Diplodocus, had a big hole on the top of their head that their nose had kind of just retracted all the way up, one of the initial kind of reasonings for that was not trunks, but was that they thought that they were aquatic and that they were breathing from the top of their head.
Oh, and like walking under the water, and then they just had this snorkel neck. You know, I love that. And why not? Let's do it.
Yeah. And I mean, as we're going to see later, Trunks also are very helpful snorkels. So you could have had both. You could have had both of the best worlds. But at this point, we don't think that sauropods were exclusively aquatic. Maybe they were doing some dipping. Maybe they were doing some fucking in lakes, if that's what you're into. But probably they weren't aquatic. So the question is, well, then why did their nose move all the way back up between their eyes? And Diplodocus is kind of like the center for this conversation because Diplodocus has a pretty obvious example. And Diplodocus doesn't have a bony separation between his two nostrils. So it doesn't have like this weird little rib of bone like several other sauropod dinosaurs do. It's just a flat sloping face and then it has like a hole at the top of their head. There have been paleontologists off and on who have suggested that potentially this might mean that Diplodocus had a trunk, including our favorite paleontological troll, paleontological shit stirrer, Bob Bakker has also written about Diplodocus having potentially a trunk.
Of course he's team trunk. He was like, shit, that's such a crazy idea. I should have come up with it. Like, yeah, that's so on brand.
Yeah. So. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit, but the whole goal of today is to talk about kind of like some face ornamentation, lips, nostrils, double chins. My angle is definitely going to be the fact that I think that dinosaurs may have looked way more stupid than we're really giving them credit for, but I feel like your section of today's podcast is really going to demonstrate that a little bit more. So why don't you give us a better definition of the soft tissue that you're talking about in particular?
Yes.
Because yours is a little bit different from mine, but both, in addition to making things look stupid, it also does tell you a lot about ecology, right? Like it tells you a lot about how this animal is behaving, how it's acting, as we'll see later, how it gets its fuck on. So like just a lot of information if you can appropriately get a good idea of soft tissue.
I'm just like, who doesn't want to listen to this? What? I heard some weird things about soft tissue this week. Yeah. And I've just been bouncing around between modern creatures that have hilariously stupid, fleshy skin flaps on their faces and bodies and thinking and getting curious. Like, come on, dinosaurs did too. I think we're very skewed by these pop culture references of what dinosaurs, these big, you know, at the like pinnacle of horror. And I think that they probably looked fucking stupid. Like, and prove me wrong, you know? Like, I just want to see more dinosaurs with trunks, and I want to see more with the ornamentation that I'm going to be talking about, which is what we see in a lot of modern birds today.
Yeah.
In one of the papers I read, they referred to these structures as labial appendages. So that kind of helps, but it kind of doesn't to me. That means it would be mostly constricting to like the face and mouth. But we're talking about... Yeah. We're talking about things like caruncles, snoods, wattles, coxcombs, all of these fun things that you can find on a lot of birds. But one of the ones that it gets popped up on your feed all the time if you start Googling this is the turkey. So if you want to go ahead and go over to the link of my images that I have sent to you. Here is our first image of a turkey sporting some of these soft tissue features. Do you want to describe what you're looking at?
I'm sure that you guys have seen a picture of a living turkey in the past, but just in case, they have a kind of naked head with some really wrinkly skin that looks kind of like testicles. And it's red. It's very red. If your testicles look like that, please go to the doctor.
But... Not always.
Okay. So this particular image that she's got is a male turkey looking a little bit shocked that he's having his... He looks kind of like he's actually in... what's that slow-mo, the glam cam that you see on red carpets? It looks like he's like a screenshot from that. He's looking over his shoulder.
Over whipping his snood back and forth.
Yeah, whipping his snood back and forth. And it's got numbers and basically it looks like, I thought that maybe, you know, turkeys just had like one of the weird words that you just mentioned, but it sounds like the caruncles are the crinkly ball skin on the head and neck.
Yep.
The snood is the flap of flesh that's hanging off of its
erectile
nose.
Erectile tissue, to be precise.
Sorry. The waddle is what all of us will get as we age on our neck. So a nice loose skin. The major caruncle is like bigger wrinkly ball sack that's a little lower than that. And then it's just got something labeled beard, which is not a thing that I, you know, there's so much distracting flesh. I didn't even realize that they had a beard. So that's what I'm looking at.
Indeed you are. So great job describing this horrifying creature. Honestly, it looks like some Voldemort, you know? And so I've seen caruncle as used to describe specific features. I've also seen it used to encompass all of these terms. So for me, I'm going to call these caruncles. And the definition of that is it refers to a small fleshy growth that is a natural part of the animal's body. In birds, a lot of these caruncles are things such as wattles or dewlaps, combs, cock combs, snoods, and earlobes. Now, I like caruncle. It comes from the Latin term caruncula, which I think is very enjoyable to say, which just means flesh. I also read an interpretation that
great baby name.
Right? Caruncula. Well, the other one is makes that even better. The other interpretation is that it means wart. So a great baby name. I mean...
Either way, flesh or wart, both potentially accurate depending on what your baby looks like.
So with the snoods, they actually are on their forehead, essentially. And when they are not erect, they are made out of erectile tissue. And so when they get essentially excited, that's when they distend off the nose to the side of the beak here, as you're seeing it.
Wait.
If you scroll down, you
can
see...
That's a face boner?
That's a thank you. Yes. And if you could scroll down, you can see one that's not erect. So the one above is erect.
Oh my God. I just thought that some turkeys had longer snoods than others, but you're telling me
you
that
just
they're
horny
growers,
ones.
Not showers. Horrifying.
Horrifying.
Absolutely horrifying.
I
didn't need.
I didn't either. And, you know, a lot of these are, if we look at to why they exist, it's thought very much that there's some sort of ornamentation features by males to attract females. Actually, the bigger and brighter colored the caruncles, the higher the testosterone and better the health of the bird. So they are, again, these visual indicators that really, really are showing health and, you know, choose me as your sexy, sexy mate. It could... They also are thought to help with some sort of thermoregulation because they allow blood to cool more quickly because they have so many more weird, like, fleshy fans hanging off that would just naturally cool the blood running through there. Yeah, but they're super strange. And in both males and female turkeys, they both have caruncles. They're usually more pronounced in the male. And again, a lot of times they're actually pale, but during courtship or when he's getting excited, they engorge with blood and become bright red or blue. And they get really, really big and hard because they've got dicks on their faces. And dinosaurs totally could have fucking had this too. Dinosaurs, definitely could have done this. We have found some dinosaurs with indicators of these sorts of soft tissue structures.
Really?
Yes, not to the extent that I desire. I really want to find a T-Rex with an erect snood over his face or her face or her face. But we're not there yet. But I am going to talk about two specimens pretty briefly that have been found with this strange facial soft tissue structures. The first of which is Pelicanomimus, something like that. It is a multitooth ornithomimid. Ornithomimids are very bird-like. They look like a fucking ostrich. They're just a dinosaur ostrich, a deep-time ostrich. And this one, Pelicanomimus, had a shit ton of teeth, which is weird because... A lot of times they thought that the ornithomimids were pretty derived and moving away from the teeth thing and going to the beak and the very bird situation. But this one was really basal. So it was a lower branch of the ornithomimid family tree. It's one of the more earlier groups. So it had tons of teeth. And a specimen that was found in the Cretaceous of Spain has evidence of a throat pouch or a dewlap, or also known as Gular's skin, which is like the pouch of a fucking pelican.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
There was, go ahead and scroll down. I don't like the, oops, I had an extra page in there. This is what one reconstruction is of Pelicanomimus. What do you see here?
I see kind of a very basic looking dinosaur head that has a real big comb on the top of its head, and then what looks like a placenta attached to its neck because they've chosen to make that colorful, like
pretty veiny.
Really red and veiny looking.
Very veiny.
That's awesome, though. See, it's not just to make these dinosaurs look stupid. I mean, that is my entire intention for today's episode, but it's also important ecological information that this animal had a pelican pouch. You know, like that tells you a lot about what it was doing.
Yes.
Theoretically.
Yes. Hypothetically, that you could do some comparisons and say, yes, you were probably a coastal creature. Maybe you were eating lots of fish. Anyway, I just think it's really, really cool, especially when you find something at the base of its family. That means that all of those dinosaurs, all ornithomimids, could have had these facial structures, these different types of caruncles, if you will. And I just I just think it's really exciting. Like, I'm not a paleo artist, but I really admire what paleo artists do. And to think of all these new territories and new ideas to be explored with this idea of maybe they're goofy, but I really enjoyed the artist below's reconstruction of our friend here, that I feel like is a little bit more to show you that it wasn't just like, I felt like the other one kind of looked like a fan, like Dilophosaurus almost, whereas this one really is a pouch, like a throat pouch that would be able to, again, hypothetically hold food and water.
Yeah, because there are like, I mean, I know that some lizards, for example, have dewlaps where they can extend their throat pouch, and that's not for food necessarily. It's for making sound or scaring off predators or being attractive. But do they know if it was extendable in a way that's, I guess I don't know how you would tell if it was more pelican-y versus more like lizard-y.
That's a great question. So what I read in the paper was that because it was discovered with a gular skin, like that they could tell the difference between the skin itself because of this incredibly well-preserved specimen from Spain, that they were able to say conclusively it is like that of a pelican. And that's why it's got its name. It's the Pelicanomimus, you know.
Yeah.
Just super exciting, right? New specimens that are showing us cool new things. And the thing I read in both this paper and the next one is that you have to be a really good fossil preparator to not just prep right on through these features. Like if they're not bone and they're just very, it can be very difficult to tell the difference between matrix and soft tissue and bone. And you have to have really skilled people to be able to see if you can really tease this apart.
Yeah.
The other dinosaur I'm going to talk about is a hadrosaur. What? Fuck yeah. Love some hadrosaurs.
Okay, very nice.
I mean, I just like when I read the title of the paper, I was like, no, this is a joke. The title literally is a mummified duck-billed dinosaur with a soft tissue coxcomb. I don't have the maturity to handle that. You put coxcomb in the title of a paper? Like, that's impressive. And these coxcombs are, again, one of these features. Those, I think, as well, are these erectile tissues that also get all big when males are huffing off against each other. Just doing what birds do. I don't know. Just making it all big and red. Ugh, wow. Gross. So, yeah. I had no idea that our show was going to make me have such a love for duck-billed dinosaurs, but here we are.
Here
and
we
this
are.
One is another one that I feel like it's kind of underrated. Edmontosaurus, you know, Edmontosaurus is one of the last of the duck-billed dinosaurs and one of, if not the biggest of them. I mean, it was a huge motherfucker, but it wasn't like sexy. It didn't have all those crests. It didn't have all that stuff for making noise and for smelling from a giant Parasaurolophus crest or whatever. Yeah. But they found this really well-preserved part of an Edmontosaurus skull from West Central Alberta, and it has soft tissue, a soft tissue crest, a coxcomb, again, like a comb like you would see on a rooster, on its head. And the significance of which is, you know, this isn't one of the sexy crested bitches, and they still were doing a crest. It was just a soft tissue crest. And I think that's really fascinating that they're evolving this display, this feature, through different means, skeletally, or through your body system.
Yeah.
So they were wondering if that these ones were used to also make noise and smell good and call all the boys to the yard and whatnot. But they apparently didn't find any nasal material.
Smell good?
Yeah, they want to smell real good. Like,
how does the coxcomb make you smell good?
Oh, because I'm distracted.
Oh, okay. I was like, are we trying to say that these have scent organs?
Yes, actually. That's what's being debated. Oh. That was the question.
Okay.
Was, were they using this before they fully understood what it would have been looked like in size and everything? There was a discussion of, so did they use them the same way to make this noise or to use their, it's also hypothesized that the crested ones have an olfactory use for them as well, for smelling. So that was the question, but the answer was no, because of, like you're talking about earlier with the positions of the nasals within the skull, this has to do with the nasal cavities and passageways in the skull. And that they're not going through this soft tissue point at all. They said it would have sucked at defense or combat. They said it was too small to store any good head fat in. I didn't know that that was a reason why other things have weird, but I guess a dewlap and stuff like that. Yeah, it is to store weird fat. So they conclude that it was for social signaling or for some sort of sexual selection. And they also think that theropods did it too, especially because when we look at dinosaurs that already have a bunch of skull ornamentations that are bony and do indeed preserve, there's indications that they probably, like you're saying, would have also had soft tissue on top of that to be like the showiest motherfuckers in the room. And it's just, we haven't necessarily found enough theropod material to do that. They also ruled out that it was taphonomy, which is like maybe something happened to that specimen after it died before it was found that made it look like it was soft tissue, but maybe it was just distorted sediment or something. But they found that it was super symmetrical in the crest and that it had clear signs of where it would have been attached to other skin around it. So it's just a really, really interesting thing. And you can go ahead and scroll through a couple specimen photos of where it would have been. They're not very pretty, though. They're whatever. No. To the last one, to see this derpy dinosaur reconstruction, which honestly to me is like, I need bigger, guys. I need bigger.
You're saying you would not have found this dinosaur sexually attractive? Its comb was too small.
It's way too small. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, come on, Edmontosaurus. You're the biggest of the like latest Cretaceous hadrosaurs. Do your thing. Like, I want it like Elvis Edmontosaurus. I don't know. I want it showier. But I like the direction we're going. I just really think we are constrained as a society to actually allow ourselves to think about dinosaurs with this sort of like caruncles, like gross, wrinkly fucking wart skin dripping off of their necks. I think that's fucking cool. Why aren't we talking about it and showing it? And I think it's because of pop culture. I think it's because we're so just stuck in our ways about what dinosaurs looked like. And a lot of that is nostalgic for people. Mm-hmm. So it is very, very hard to like open your minds. And I should know because I can't draw for shit. And I really wanted to draw some of this. So I turned to the evil empire of chat or whatever, some AI. And it literally gave me a message where it was like, we're sorry, you're an idiot. And I was like, fuck you.
It couldn't do it. It couldn't even conceptualize.
I could scroll through this. Like I was, I kept putting pictures of a super, super crunkly turkey head in the same was a T-Rex and said, blend these. And I'll show you the results I got. But eventually it said this, which is just terrifying. I understand that you would like an image of a velociraptor with facial features similar to a turkey. However, I can't incorporate those features into a velociraptor because they are too specific to turkeys and they don't make any sense on a dinosaur. And I was like, fuck you. That's not your choice to make, ChatGPT. Actually, sorry, this is Google Gemini. Fuck you, Google Gemini. And they went on to say, for example, the snood and wattle are fleshy growths that developed on domesticated turkeys, likely due to selective breedings by humans. These features would have not been present on dinosaurs. So fucking AI is trying to kill my buzz and my joy and just let me feel my I'm like, why are you trying to kill my imagination? And I'm frustrated because obviously you've trained on the wrong internet because there are these features present on dinosaurs.
Also,
and who knows?
Birds are dinosaurs. So yes, they are present on dinosaurs.
So scroll on through my last pictures on there and that will conclude my snood mood, my
snood mood board,
waddle gobble. Yeah, my snood mood board. I love that. But yeah, I'll post these. I know they're AI, so I'm sure people are, I get it. But it's just fun to get curious. Maybe I'll paint them. My favorite one.
It's really good information that, yeah, you're still not going to be out of a job because AI can't even conceptualize that maybe Velociraptor looks sillier than it actually was portrayed in Jurassic Park.
Exactly. And I think the last image here is like the silliest, most fantastic one that I got it to create. Not only because it has its T-Rex face with a snood that's erect and some caruncles, and it's got the body of a turkey. It also has rainbow feathers. Yeah. Like Google Gemini gave up and was like, well, obviously this dinosaur was gay. So here you go.
Yeah, it's a very
like happy Pride.
Pride Month Thanksgiving mix up. God, and its wings are just what is up with its feet?
Oh well, it doesn't do feet. It doesn't do feet well.
Can't do feet or hands, let alone dinosaur feet. It looks like it's wearing a ring. Very weird.
it's being tracked. By me. So I got super excited about these ideas again of these like weird tissues that, again, social signaling, impressing mates, all this cool stuff, also species recognition, like really, really cool. And we can understand more about ecology, their environment by learning about these new features. But I just want to hear more about trunks.
Yeah.
Because they're the weirdest facial feature of them all.
Yeah. When you look at like these snoods and waddles and things, I think part of the reason that we can't conceptualize them is that there's really not a lot of like bony correlates, right? Like you can't like look at a chin and see an attachment for a waddle. So unless you have exceptional preservation, you're not going to know that it had a big old throat pouch, right?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And I kept trying to find osteological indicators of caruncles and snoods. And I didn't have a whole lot of luck. It was some weird stuff. Oh, also, caruncles are also features that we discuss in urethras and eyeballs. So don't Google it like I did. You'll see a bunch of fun stuff. But I am very curious what is the sign? I want to go look at a shit ton of domestic turkeys and their skeletons and try to figure out if there's any osteological indicator from the bones that they have these insane saggy wart sacs.
Yeah. The difference between this and, of course, trunks is that trunks do have a ton of osteological signatures. Like there's a lot of very obvious signs that you have a trunk. And before we go any deeper, I am going to mention that when we say trunk or proboscis, those are not very well-defined words. And there is a paper out there where they have tried to define the different types, which I do like that they've pointed out that there are these different types and they go through them. I don't love the words that they've chosen, and you're going to understand why. But I also want to point out that this paper starts off with a tongue twister. I guess is the paper doesn't start off, but when they're going into all these terms, it does. Although the term proboscis has both precedence and precision, it was displaced by a poor substitute term, trunk, which just, I did say that a couple times actually earlier today to warm up. Yeah, it doesn't rhyme, but it is hard to say. So they point out that, yeah, like there are different types of these proboscises. That word, by the way, is exactly why I say trunk and not proboscis, is because trunks is a lot easier to say than proboscises. But they say that we should only call an elephant trunk or a tapir trunk a proboscis because it's got both lip involvement and nose involvement. So, and it's super mobile and they use it to pick up stuff. A tapir, if you have not, or if you're not familiar with that animal, I'm going to talk about a lot of weird animals today that are living. Tapirs are definitely one to Google. If you've never seen one, it's T-A-P-I-R. You should also put the word baby in front that. And that's how I got through graduate school.
Yep.
Even today, I was tearing up looking at some of the Saiga photos because I was like, I remember watching these in between comprehensive exams. So tapirs look kind of like you stapled a trunk to a pig, but the trunk isn't super long. Tapirs are actually more closely related to horses, though, than they are to pigs. And both tapirs and elephants have trunks where they can pick things up and move it. And both their lip muscles and the muscles and like their nasal passageway are involved in the trunk, which is not the case necessarily with everybody else. So they say that proboscis should be just for if you can pick things up basically with it. And then they say things that like Saiga, which is spelled S-A-I-G-A, you should also put the word baby in front of that. And you should take the word, you should also put a little negative sign and gun, because there's a gun called a Saiga and you don't, that's not what is interesting. So baby Saiga, very cute. They are antelopes that have trunks. And they look like there's a character in Star Wars. I think his name is like Watu that has like a big, weird, goofy ass trunk. Alf is another weird character that has a trunk. They look like they are from Star Wars. They are very goofy looking. And I'm going to show you a picture of one of them or a video of them running later just so you can really see that nose bounce in all of its pure glory. So Saiga. Saiga have a trunk that only has nasal involvement. Like the lips haven't really been incorporated too much into it. Saiga cannot pick things up with its trunk. It's very much the snood of trunks. But instead of calling it a snood, which would have been a more fun term, they call it a proriscus. I didn't look up the Latin.
Proriscus?
Uh-huh. And then they say that... So there are some fish that have elongated snouts, and they're saying anything that has like a structure that has some degree of skeletal reinforcement. So like a lot of fish have like little tubular noses and things. And they also say that a rhino falls into this category because they have a horn on top of their weird little lip. So they're calling that a prorhinosis. And then a tube snout where you have both the upper and the lower jaw involved. So something like, in this case, these are mostly fish where the teeth move forward, but the nose stays back. So they like jut out their teeth really far. And they call that one a prorhynchus. And then the last one that they have is just a mandibular version. And I don't know why you would call it a trunk if it's just an underbite. But this did have
like
a cool name.
Fat lower lip.
Right. Yeah. So I guess this is again a stupid fish thing. But they said specifically that this has had a name in the past that they called a Schnatzenorgan. So it's a German name.
Wow.
And they want to go from Schnatzenorgan to Progeniontis. Progeniontis.
No.
So that's proboscis. Proriscus, prorhinosis, prorhynchus, progenionatus.
No.
And that's the last time I'm going to say any of those words. So just be aware that when we're talking about snots today.
Snot succus? What is it? I want it on my body.
Ew. You want the underbite on your body, or you just want the word snotch an organ?
That's so funny. Snotch an organ.
Snots an organ. Yeah. Which is.
Snots an organ.
Yeah. So.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm going to forget about that like as soon as we stop talking and laugh when I hear this again.
Oh my God. So the trunks that we're going to talk about today are really just going to be the proboscis and the periscus. And I'm just going to call them all trunks because we're going to talk about all the various reasons that you could have them. And it turns out almost every animal that has a trunk uses it for a couple different reasons. Trunks are very multi-purpose. So now that we have like this idea that there are different trunks, I thought we would go through what they can use them for.
Ooh, yay.
Yeah, because this is important, right? If we're gonna talk about Diplodocus having a trunk, we need to know why it would have a trunk, because that also will tell you what sort of bony signatures you want to look for. Because if it's a proboscis, where you have both the lip and the nose involved, that is going to be something that is much more intense, that is used for picking things up. But a lot of animals that have trunks don't have that degree of flexibility, which means that they don't necessarily have the same muscular signatures, and they also don't have the same degree of innervation. So they don't have as much like actual control over their trunk, which is something very visible when you Google baby saiga and just watch them laying there, barely twitching their little nostrils. God, it's cute. Aww. It makes me want to cry just thinking about that video. It's so adorable. So with trunks, of course, we've talked about you can pick things up, and it's not like they're picking up trash. You can use them to selectively feed, which is a big part of what elephants do. It's a big part of what tapirs do, is you can pick things up off of the ground to eat them. And with elephants, they have really invested in that, right? Elephants have a huge trunk. If you look at their skulls, they have a very flat face, and they have actually lost basically like their clipping teeth. They don't have incisors because they don't clip things. They just rip it up with their trunk. They also have a really short neck. So if they didn't have a trunk, they couldn't get down all the way to the ground to eat things. So elephants have like really fully invested in the trunk, which makes sense because
trunk.
They've gone full trunk because for them, a trunk selectively feeds. They can suction things up, including water, and then they can spray it on themselves. And in fact, they have been seen like suctioning water out of like cracks and crevices in rocks. So like water that you wouldn't otherwise be able to get access to. And I don't think we'll go into this paper necessarily, but I did read this ridiculous paper about elephant suction. Some facts I want to tell you are that elephants, we now know, can inhale at speeds of over 150 meters per second, which is 30 times the speed of a human sneeze.
Oh, okay.
That's a measurement that we have.
Wow, that's also how, why, okay. And aren't they like 30 times my size too? I think I'm okay with them sneezing louder than me.
Oh, they're not sneezing, they're sucking. And elephants
sucking. Oh, God.
They can suck water at an equivalent rate to 20 toilets flushing simultaneously. I don't know. Wow. We have a low
Where
flush
does it all
toilet,
go?
So. So they can also blow things with their trunk. Not they can blow objects.
Yeah.
And Darwin actually watched elephants.
Oh, he watched
basically.
What?
He watched them blow air off of like corners and basically like fucking play pool with air streams to get objects to move towards them to eat them.
Wow.
So like they can shoot air. So. Yeah, trunks can suction things. They can use them as a snorkel because elephants are very good swimmers, so they can kind of stick them up out of the water. They can smell things in multiple directions. They can pick things up with their little trunks, and they can suck things up with their little trunks. So, yeah, elephants really have heavily invested in having trunks do kind of everything for them. Tapirs are a little bit more classic as far as when you're looking at the fossil record. Lots and lots of animals have trunks, and they more often have trunks that are like tapirs or the other animals we're going to talk about, where they don't have like the full on flat face, can't reach the ground, must have had a giant trunk body shape. They have kind of like a half and half sort of super mobile elongated lip thing. So selectively feeding, suctioning things up, sucking up water, obviously to be super sexy, right? So seals in particular, things like elephant seals and hooded seals, they have big fleshy prorhynchus, I guess, where they're using them to be sexually dimorphic. They can also use them for sound production. And I think at this point, I'm going to go ahead and show you this video of this saga running in slow-mo Baywatch style, because it's very funny. And I'm not going to bother turning on the sound for this one. So let's go ahead and share this screen. You ready?
Side view.
I don't know what it's doing.
Oh my god,
it's
gross. So stupid. So stupid. I mean, and by that part though, that's like when a little kid is running and they're wearing jeans that are like wet and too long and they're just swimming every time they pick their foot up and it just like thwops around. That's this animal's face.
Yeah, it really is. It just looks like one single saggy titty that isn't being supported by a bra.
Yeah, very
fluffy.
It does. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can see they do have a little bit of muscular control. They can move just the tippity tip tip, but they don't actually use it for picking things up. They can't pick anything up with it. And the male's trunks are significantly larger than the female's trunks. So there's a great deal of sexual dimorphism.
Okay.
So the reason sexual dimorphism, both in this and in elephant seals, is partly visual, but it's also partly for sound production. I found a couple really cute little calls. So the first one that you're going to listen to is, actually, I won't tell you what this is. You tell me, I mean, it's a saiga, but what do you think that they're talking about here?
I mean, it sounds very much like there's a higher pitched noise, a saiga, that sounds, and then a lower pitched one. And they sound like they're trying to figure out whose turn it is to unload the dishwasher.
Yeah, so there is a lower pitched one and a higher pitched one, because that is the adorable communication that you might hear between a mother saiga and their baby, because that's them keeping in voice contact. So I guess if you go and you spy on a saiga herd, especially pretty close after the calves are born, you can hear just this symphony of weird snorts. So
oh
we're going to compare that
so
to...
Cute. I just make fart noises with Tracy.
I mean, that did sound a little farty. So here, this one's really short, so you're going to have to listen real quick.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it. Here, we'll do it again.
That sounded very pig. Like, that was very like...
Yes.
Like, I'm a pig looking for some food. I'm looking for food.
Yeah, so the word I would use to describe that was a snort. The word that the paper uses to describe it is a roar.
A roar.
A roar.
Yes.
So fierce.
Now, what I will say is send me this. I will figure out a way to make it my ringtone.
It's a good ringtone, huh? Oh,
which
I should
is
get
funny
that as
because
my ringtone.
I never have my phone on ring, but it would be a funny joke.
So... That was a male saiga. So that's the beautiful sound that they can produce as the result of having such a big nose. But they do use it pretty extensively for sound production. However, that is not, as it turns out, why necessarily saiga evolved their trunk. So saiga antelope, they live up on like the, I want to call them the plains, but they're not the plains. They're in like Kazakhstan, up like in the high elevation tundra kind of zones.
Yes.
They travel in very big herds. They travel very extensively. They're migratory. And when they walk and when they run with their head down close to the ground. And I guess that gives them like some mechanical advantage, because it means that their neck muscles can help pull their legs, which isn't you can try that at home, I guess, if you want to. If just putting your head down make running on forehand on all hands and knees easier. But
no.
As a result, because they are running in these areas that have pretty extensive dust, they inhale just an absolute shit ton of dust. Like they are getting dust in their nostrils all the time, which is why we think that Saiga, they actually probably evolved these trunks. Their trunks are very different. If you look at the musculature of their trunks, they've actually adapted the muscles not so that they can move the tip of their nose, but so that they can squeeze down really hard on that big puffy part. So they have what's called inside your nasal passageway, so it's what's called a vestibule, which I always thought was just a part of a tent, but apparently it's also a mechanical term for the body. But it's like a big holding space, right? And in Saiga, it's huge and it's covered in mucus on the inside, not the outside. So they inhale, and then because it's going from like a skinny space to a big space, it slows the air down and all the dust and stuff drops out and gets stuck to all their snot, which means that they don't inhale it. And their noses have these muscles to like squeeze all the snot juice back out. It's not even a sneeze. It's like
a contraction. And, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I read this sentence in one of these papers. Nasal vestibulae of Saiga always contain concretions of mucus cemented dust. Amy, they have snot bezoars.
Wow. Yeah. Now I want to find a fossil Saiga snot rocket.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate trace fossil. Snot rocket.
Can snot? Yeah. We haven't even talked about snot. Wow. Yeah. God, they're cool.
Yeah, Saiga are really cool. I also read some very depressing papers because Saiga are very endangered. They basically are all, everybody is infected with this bacteria, including the Saiga, but there was a weird set of environmental triggers that caused that bacteria to overgrow. In 2015, 200,000 Saiga antelope died, and they died in a period of 3 weeks, mass kills. And it was 100% mortality. So anytime any of these groups of Saiga that were in the wrong temperature regime, basically they all died of blood poisoning is functionally what it was.
That is grim.
Yeah. Fortunately, Saiga, real good at fucking. So they have recovered pretty quickly, but this happens to them a lot. They have mass mortality events every couple of years where they just lose a fuck ton of Saiga. And then they just breed a whole bunch, I guess.
And they can get their numbers back up. Wow, yeah, that's impressive. Yeah. It's also impressive for, they're big animals. If you told me that with rabbits, I'd be like, sure, give them, 2 years. But
they're not that big. They're goat size, I think. All right, so being sexy, making sexy horn sounds, slowing down air so that you can drop things out, feeding, especially if you don't have, clipping teeth. Also, a lot of them have the ability to, not Saiga necessarily, but a lot of animals that have a proboscis, have the ability to have stereo olfaction, or they can sniff in different directions at the same time. So they can get a 3D perception of the world. Yeah, this is especially important in things like dik-diks. Mm-hmm. So dik-diks are a very tiny antelope that even smaller than Saiga that live in Africa, and they have little tiny trunks, and they are also worth looking up, but just make sure to drop the C. Otherwise, you're going to get something completely different.
Yeah, which is could still be, depending on your flavor, good for you. Yeah. But it's better with the teeny tiny cute little...
You're going to get one type of fleshy proboscis or a different type of fleshy proboscis, depending on whether you include see. So sniffing in different directions. There are some gradations when we talk about a proboscis. It's not you have a trunk or you have no trunk. It's you have a trunk or you have a really big, weird, fleshy lip. And so moose also get included in this very regularly. So sniffing in different directions is one of the hypothesized uses for the moose's very large fleshy nose, because their nostrils are actually super far apart, more so than in deer. I guess deer and elk, their nostrils are a little bit more on the front, and in moose, they're a little bit more on the side. So they get a little bit more of this 3D thing. And you want to know what they use that for, Amy? What do you think they're sniffing?
What are they sniffing? They're trail piss. Runners.
It's piss detection. Not trail runners. Not your brother. It's piss. Apparently, moose are one of the few cervids that are really into piss play and marking where they're going with piss. So they really have strong senses of smell, presumably, to find other moose through
urine.
The power of piss. Yeah. And then
the
moose.
The power of piss.
Moose are also kind of weird. So, I mean, moose are weird in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of different theories as to why moose have trunks. And all of them could simultaneously be true because, I mean, that's the case for a lot of these other animals. You can use them a lot of different ways. So, moose have incredibly good nostril control. They have like extra special muscles and cartilage that can close their nostrils off completely, which is really helpful because moose like to eat underwater and they actually like to go diving underwater. They can dive down, I think, as deep as like 5 meters, which is why they get eaten by whales.
What? God, this is some horror shit. Who needs dinosaurs? Do you imagine swimming in a fucking lake and from the depths a moose emerges?
Yeah.
5 meters is a lot. That's a fucking almost 20 feet. Terrifying.
They use them to close their nose while diving. But then when another paper theorized that, and I don't think anybody's looked into this, but I guess that moose are pretty front heavy when they dive. So one paper theorized that if they close their nostrils with a whole bunch of air in there, maybe they could make their head into a little air buoy to help keep them kind of supported as they go through the water while swimming. So literal airheads.
Wow.
You could tell by my tone of voice that I think that might be bullshit.
Yeah, that seems like a reach.
It seems like a reach, but it is a very funny mental picture. So yeah, these are all really great reasons to have a trunk, which any one of these could potentially apply to Diplodocus, right? Or other dinosaurs. Because the thing is that you don't have to have just a big fleshy elephant trunk on something like a sauropod dinosaur. You can have a weird floppy saiga trunk. You could have a piss detecting nostril system. Any of these could be possible. All right, so I'm gonna go through the reasons why people have said no, Diplodocus didn't have a trunk. And I want you to keep in mind, we've already talked about how those bony correlates include things like your nasals get pulled back. If you have like a lot of nerve function to control your proboscis, so like elephants and tapirs, the infraorbital foramen, which is a hole in your skull where your nerves come through to control your lips, that is very big in elephants and tapirs. It is not enlarged in things that do not have a super fleshy trunk. So just keep that in mind as we go, that there's nasal retraction, there's muscle attachments that are visible, and then there's large foramina if you're doing like trunk twerking, essentially. But if you're just doing trunk little wiggles or trunk little jiggles, as the saiga are doing, you don't necessarily need to have a lot of nerve control. Given that in mind, the big arguments against sauropods having trunks, which I also do think are largely rooted in nostalgia, because a trunk on a sauropod dinosaur looks very silly.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Dinosaurs and most reptiles, just kind of generally, and even birds to a certain extent, don't really seem to have a lot of facial musculature. In mammals, most mammals have a pretty large amount of facial musculature. We have mobile lips. We have expressive eyebrows. We have like wiggly noses, all of those sorts of things. But when you think about a lizard, it can't necessarily do most of those things because it really doesn't have a lot of superficial muscle mass, which is important because when you look at mammals, part of the reason that so many, like trunks evolved at least 3 times in oreodonts for 3 different purposes, I'm pretty sure. People think glyptodons, the big armadillos, probably had to have had a trunk of some kind because they don't have incisors and they couldn't reach the ground.
Even cooler. God
damn. Even cooler.
so cool.
Yeah, there's potentially some sloths that are looking a little bit trunkier. There's horses maybe have had some more trunkiness at different points of in time. Rhinos, tapirs have been trunk since like day one. A lot of nota ungulate. Like, it's just very, very common. And it's especially common in herbivorous animals. So especially common in the group ungulates. So anything that has a hoof, which we're not really sure necessarily that that's a actual group. So these are things that are re-evolving many, many, many times throughout. I keep getting so mad because at some point PBS Eons published an episode about carcinification, how all of these weird like lobsters and shrimp are becoming crabs and everything's going towards crabs. That's bullshit. Everything's going to trunks. Trunks have evolved way more times than crab body plan. Trunks all the way. Everyone's going to get a big trunk before they get crab claws.
I want the world.
Yeah, just a crab with a trunk. Dinosaurs don't have a lot of muscles to potentially adapt into a trunk. And when you look at their faces, they don't really seem to have a ton of muscular scarring. So they don't have a lot of places where it's necessarily rooting into their cheeks, which is, you know, that's a pretty solid, like, well, where's your muscular proboscis? But the other thing that Diplodocus in particular does not really seem to have is that Diplodocus, no one's 100% sure where nerves go in dinosaurs, because they're kind of derived. So like, how do you get a nerve from a brain all the way through the face? But we're pretty sure that some of the nerves that would have been kind of trunky are going through a foramen that is kind of like the infraorbital foramen. And they measured the size of Diplodocus's foramen and they found that it was something like only 6 millimeters of a nerve could go through. So if Diplodocus had a trunk, it probably couldn't have been a big fleshy trunk. It couldn't have been something that had a lot of muscular control. And I agree with that paper. You're probably not going to have an elephant trunk on a sauropod. I don't think that any of the evidence that they have presented doesn't mean that you don't have a slightly more mobile snood or that you don't have a saiga trunk. So I want to present a couple of reasons as to why I think Diplodocus could have used a trunk. And keep in mind that this is from a mammalian paleontologist who thinks dinosaurs are very silly. My first theory is that Diplodocus had a trunk that was akin to what the saiga has, but was for the snifflies. I think that Diplodocus had a don't get pollen in my nose while I'm going through all of these ferns trunk.
Oh, and I mean, and the, well, no, never mind. Never mind, Diplodocus, that's Morrison, that's before angiosperms. Just kidding.
Yeah, it's really more of the spores. Right. But they ate ferns, right? So yes. I'm thinking dusty. And I mean, every time I've touched a fern, it's been kind of dusty. I can't imagine putting my face in it, you know? No sniffles. It's an anti-allergy thing. I also wonder if they could have potentially used them for sound production. I don't know how sauropods were communicating. Yeah. I like to imagine that they were like saiga, where if they're moving in large herds, they have constant communication. That's my sheep do that all the time. When they're moving in a big group, they're talking to each other all the time.
With their relatively small heads, does that make generating noise harder?
Exactly.
So they've evolved a feature to help amplify the sound because of the constraints of their form.
Especially with a super long neck. Right? I can't imagine that helps them concentrate lung power to really make a powerful noise. So maybe they needed an extra noise reverberation engine. And then, of course, you know, the classic, to smell piss. that to seems to be a pretty big important feature in some mammals. So
cloak to cloak.
And I did want to finish off on just that I read this paper that was, oh no, they don't have any of these nerves. They don't have muscles. Their faces were just bare bone. and then I read another paper where the paper itself didn't really talk too much about it. But then I read the Pop Press article about it. And they just keep mentioning, oh yeah, we didn't really go into it. But that Titanosaur had like just so many like blood vessels and nerves on the front of its face, like so many grooves. What? It must have had a really mobile lip. And I'm like, it didn't have a fucking lip. It had a mobile fucking trunk to sniff piss with.
Oh my God. How do we get in on this? How do I sell my soul? And no. That's why what I say, we figure out the way. You mentor a student. They take lead. Ooh. We enjoy, but we take part in the research of the sillies. Because, I just think it's really fascinating. And it does seem like we have more material. And I do think that your and my perspective as mammal paleontologists in dinosaur world is a refreshing different take, right? So I think it would be very curious and cool to see. And I know that my article, the lip one, ended with a call for, we just need to find a mummified tyrannosaur and then we'll know about the lips. And I immediately laughed and thought, I hope we do find a mummified tyrannosaur of just its cloaca. That's it.
We need to know more about that rather than the
lip
thing.
I don't care about its face. I want to see a mummified butthole. Everything hole. Many holes. So look at the potential. Cool projects, good things to find, and just a fun way. Like if you're in paleontology and you take things too seriously, then you're in the wrong place. I mean, we study ancient dead shit that no one has ever seen before. You need to have a sense of adventure and want to question the status quo around how we think these animals would have looked like and behaved, and look at the modern animal kingdom and how weird it is. The paleo life was weird.
There's so many goofy ass animals out there. I guarantee dinosaurs were just as goofy looking.
And I want to celebrate that. That is so much fun. So thank you for teaching us all about trunks and allowing me to just carunkle on over. So
trunks and snoods. Who came up with the name snoods, you think?
Like, I don't know, but... Right. It is also, if you Google snood, it's also what they call like a bandana that you put on your dog's neck. So if you search dinosaur snood, you're fucked. So I had better luck with searching dinosaur caruncle, dinosaur like soft tissue, that kind of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Coxcomb.
Yeah. So I guess my final question for you is that I was, listening to the first round edit of last week's podcast, and there was a moment in there where I made a joke about chickens smacking each other with their waddles.
Yes.
And you went, yes. Is that how they fight? So.
This is true.
Can you tell me I feel like that's kind of like a chameleons or lizards sort of moment. So I just want to give you like that chance for redemption now that you've looked into waddles and caruncles and
how useful they are for fighting.
Yeah. Are turkeys bitch slapping each other with snoods?
With their weird ball sack face skin.
Helicoptering at one another.
Well, I mean, it does seem like, they're not.
They're not a weapon.
They're not a weapon. But in terms of intimidation and display like alpha versus little betas, I think some of that goes into it for sure. But yes, it is not. I guess sometimes I think of a rooster's comb is more exciting. No, it is exactly as exciting as I think it is, just in different ways. It's okay that they don't fight with it.
Okay.
It gets weirdly erect and red. Yeah. That's enough for me. Not in that way, but like to keep me interested. Oh God. Thank you for listening. If you liked the podcast, be sure to rate and review us on your listening platform of choice. We really appreciate it.
If you'd like to hear more and support the show, follow us on Patreon for some exclusive bits or on our various social media platforms. You can follow Amy on Instagram at Mary Anning's Revenge.
And Megan on Instagram and TikTok at GeoPedalFabric, or both of us at Weird and Dead on Instagram and TikTok.
This podcast is part of the Geology Podcasting Network.
Produced by the traveling geologist, Chris Spencer.
Cover art provided by Chris Spencer and the hosts.
Our theme song is Unlock Me by Krasnow. Editing services provided by the amazing Katie Bradley.
Hosted by and researched by us, Amy Atwater and Megan Weatherall. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, this whole episode, we didn't have to defend our husband's various dicks, so... Of course, we're pretending to be sexually attracted to Combs.
My partner definitely doesn't have various dicks or anything like that.